And welcome to a Juno afternoon today, Monday, February 24th, 2014. My name's Scott Burton. Joan and I have switched this week. I'll be doing today and she'll be tomorrow. Today, we get to hear from City Manager Kim Kiefer. We'll also be hearing about the Read Across America event from Harborview Elementary School librarian Julie Leary and Cherry Eklund. And we get to hear about the Choate Mansion across the street from the Governor's House. We'll get the scoop on what's going there from Mark Choate. And we'll also get to hear about the KRNN Spotlight Concert Series, the North Country Cajun Club, Writer's Almanac, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The use of Native American-themed mascots and images is once again up for debate today in the Oregon legislature. KWSO's Will Robbins has more.
On Valentine's Day, the Oregon Senate unanimously approved a bill which included compromise agreements on the use of Native-themed mascots in public and private schools. Today, the Oregon House Education Committee will hear arguments for and against Senate Bill 1509. The bill would allow district school boards in Oregon to enter into approved written agreements with federally recognized Native American tribes for the use of Native American-themed mascots, names, and images. In 2013, lawmakers passed a similar bill, but Governor John Kitzhaber vetoed it, saying it installed too broad an exemption to a blanket ban adopted by the Oregon Board of Education in 2012. Approval in the House Education Committee would send the bill to a vote by the House, and if approved, would go back to Governor Kitzhaber for his signature. In Oregon, I'm Will Robbins, reporting for National Native News.
A central South Dakota reservation has announced plans to bring 4G broadband internet to its residents. Crow Creek's tribal leader says people will have access to state-of-the-art communication services. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Currently, about 150 customers on the Crow Creek Reservation have broadband internet through Native American Telecom. That's a tribally owned telecommunications firm. The company and tribe have announced plans for a new service using Tasca Connect's 4G LTE on tribal land. The partnership will offer fixed wireless and mobile broadband internet and will give communities access to distance learning, telemedicine, and advanced communication opportunities. Crow Creek Tribal Chairman Brandon Sazu says members of his tribe often go without basic necessities like food, shelter, and heating, and the new venture will greatly improve communication. Tasca Connect's Vice President of Sales, Michael Sisto, says the firm is looking forward to partnering with Native American Telecom to expand services to tribal members. Native American Telecom is one of only 10 tribally owned telecommunications firms in the U.S. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
There's a new plan to pay for the completion of a Native American museum in Oklahoma. As KGOU's Kirk Wartney reports, the proposal is still far from being a sure thing.
Supporters of the American Indian Cultural Center and Museum have been waiting on $40 million from the state of Oklahoma to match the same amount in private money to finish the partially completed facility in Oklahoma City. Money left behind in Oklahoma's unclaimed property fund could be used to help pay for its completion. The State Senate Appropriations Committee voted overwhelmingly for the bill to take $40 million out of the unclaimed property fund. Republican State Senator Kyle Lovelace says the money has been in the fund so long, it's time to use it for the good of the state.
They've taken out ads, they've taken commercials, they've done everything the state knows to do to get this money back to individuals, and it's been 10 years, so it therefore becomes available to the legislature to use for one-time expenditures.
But the leader of the Oklahoma House of Representatives says he's not seeing excitement from his members about spending the money on the center. Some lawmakers say Oklahoma has already put too much cash into the sprawling $170 million museum at the crossroads of Interstates 35 and 40. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Wartney in Oklahoma City.
February 2012, women were elected to serve on San Ildefonso Pueblo's Tribal Council for the first time. Members were previously appointed, but an agreement allowed women to vote and run for a place on the 10-person council. The tribe is located in New Mexico, north of Santa Fe. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org.
National Native News airs on Prairie Public Radio with support from United Tribes Technical College, Bismarck, North Dakota, serving American Indian students from around the country. Online at uttc.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, and welcome back to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, February 24th, 2014. I'm your host for today, Switched with Joan Pardis. She'll be back tomorrow. And I'm joined now in the studio by Kim Kiefer. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
All right, so you are the city manager.
I am.
Wow, that's a big title. Tell us about it.
It's a big job. It's a big job. People, you know, what do you do every day? And a lot of what I do is go to meetings. Mm-hmm. And my job is to take the policy that the assembly and the direction the assembly sets and implement that policy.
Okay.
And make those things happen. And also keep the city running.
Right.
And so I've got, there's a wonderful leadership team, all the department directors that make up that leadership team to keep us going in the direction that we can be the most effective and efficient and effective organization as possible.
Okay.
And be conscious of how we spend taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
And be creative in how we look at things so that give people permission to think outside of the box, because sometimes you come up with some of the best ideas that way.
Great. And what do you like most about the job?
The people.
Yeah.
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 I get to meet all sorts of people, which I love. I've lived here. My parents moved me here in the middle of sixth grade. My dad was one of the Boeing layoffs in the 70s, and I wasn't too keen about leaving the Seattle area in the middle of sixth grade, but I am eternally grateful that they made that transition up here because I love Juno.
Oh, good. All right. So we have some business to discuss as well, right?
Okay, we do.
What are some things you want to tell us about?
I think the first thing I'd like to remind people about is, you know, this kind of weather, a lot of people are out backcountry
mm-hmm.
skiing and snow machining and doing all kinds of things. And sometimes with that comes some injuries, and remind people that if you're within cell phone coverage, do call 911 first.
Okay.
It's important to get that response going as quickly as possible.
Then they'll call the troopers. They'll yep. call Juno Mountain Rescue.
Yep, they'll make all the links. So, you know, if they need to, they'll call the helicopter company, and they'll work on putting all those pieces together and getting the right group of people up there to respond to the situation.
All right, so call 911
yes.
when trouble happens.
Please.
All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Sounds like good advice. What else is on your list?
Well, we have a couple, in the next 2 weeks, we have a couple deadlines coming up.
Okay.
We have the Youth Activity Grant, and that deadline is coming up on March 3rd at 4:30. You can get this information at juno.org. And youth activity grants go to organizations that provide activities for Juno's youth.
Okay.
And so all the information is there. The application process you can pull off at juno.org. There's also the social service grants that are due also the first week in March, on March 7th. And once again, that information you can get at juno.org. And those grants go to the social service agencies in town that serve adults, youth, and quite a variety. I think last year we funded almost $900,000 worth of grants to the agencies in town.
Great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's very good.
So some good grants coming up.
Mm-hmm.
JEDC, are we there yet?
Actually, you know what? It's not JEDC that's doing it, but it's the Economic Development Plan.
Oh, okay.
And we have a contractor that's doing it.
Okay.
And so it's the Juno Economic plan, development plan.
Okay.
People do get mixed up with that. So we call it the economic development plan. And that started, it kicked off in January, and it will be going on for about a year. And once again, I'm pushing everybody to juno.org, but that's where you can find information out. And from that, there will be a link to the economic development plan that people can watch what's going on and see when the meetings are. Right now, they're doing stakeholder interviews with a variety of different people. They talk to all the assembly members, and then they're meeting out with the community groups. There will be telephone surveys and other surveys that will be happening with that. There will be a report to the assembly in April about what they're seeing so far. So if there's anybody interested in an economic development plan for Juneau, definitely go to juneau.org, and you can get to the page. And they also will have Twitter. They have Facebook. They have all sorts of stuff. So you can keep yourself informed by going to that webpage.
All right. Sounds like a nice resource there, juneau.org. What else is on the list?
Let's see. Well, we've got an assembly meeting tonight, 7 o'clock.
All right.
Number of things on the list for that. Tonight's meeting, one of the ordinances that will be up for public hearing is incorporating the City Museum into the library. Right now, the City Museum sits under Parks and Recreation. And the library director and the City Museum director started talking and said, you know, really our missions fit a little closer together with libraries and museums. And you think about the building that's adjacent to you with the State Library Archives Museum building. We weren't the only ones to think about putting those two under the same roof. And so both directors, the Parks and Rec director and the library director, support that. And so that will be on one of the ordinances for public hearing tonight. 7 o'clock, Assembly Chambers.
All right. Go be part of city democracy in action, right?
Yes.
All right. What about parking downtown?
Yeah, parking.
I know some people have a few questions about that.
Yes, quite a few people have had some questions. So we no longer have a parking holiday. Everybody, everybody has 2 hours on the street at no cost in the parking management zone. So the important thing to know about that is that's downtown. So basically it goes from Main Street to the downtown library, up to 4th Street, and then down to the water is an easy way to think about it. And in that area, Monday through Friday from 8 until 6 o'clock, you can park on the street for 2 consecutive hours. You can't then move your car to someplace else in that zone and park for another 2 hours. It's one time you get 2 hours. And then we've created a couple hourly parking places, parking lots. So there's a parking lot adjacent to the Baranoff, which we call the North Franklin lot.
Right.
There's a lot at the corner of Egan and Main, sort of that outside lot across from where people get off the bus. That area is now a pay by hour spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 15 spots in the marine parking garage. So it's the one on the water underneath the library. There's 15 pay spots there. So it's 75 cents an hour to pay in those spaces, and you have to do the old-fashioned payment. You can't do credit card. You have to do coins or dollar bills.
Okay.
You find the number of the parking space you're in, and you go to the pay box, put the dollars in, that same number in the pay box.
Okay. And going back to the two-hour free parking, do we still need to go to the machine and register?
No, the machines are no longer operable.
Okay.
And so you don't need to register anything. You've got 2 hours, and our CSOs are out monitoring where people are parking and when they're parking there.
Okay. And if you don't want to deal with any parking whatsoever, you could take the bus.
You can take the bus.
Downtown.
Good segue.
Thank you. And thinking about, I'm a bus user myself. I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
The Capital Transit Master Plan is coming together.
The Transit Development Plan has been in the works for probably the last 8 or 10 months.
Okay.
And so it's been to the assembly a couple times, and we do this every 10 years. We look at the what the current plan is, what changes we want to make. This year, a lot of comments came back of trying to provide some service at Riverside Drive, try to provide some service up in Costco area, and maybe even try and go out to the ferry terminal. And as we looked at that, of course, then we started putting dollars with that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those increased service areas cost somewhere between $400 and $1,000 to be able to implement them. And so there's also making some changes on the system we have now will cost approximately $200,000, and it will make the connections better. So if you want, if you're, as you said, a rider, if you're going out to Nugget Mall and you want to make that connection, with the changes that we're talking about, we could actually make those connections a little bit more than we do now. So the transportation development plan is, or the transit development plan is going to the Planning Commission for their review, and then what they do is they review it, provide comments, and forward that on to the Assembly for adoption. We hope to have the Assembly adopt it by resolution in March, and then we, having them adopt it doesn't mean they provide the funding for it, too. So we want them to adopt the plan, and then we will come back as we go through the budget process in April and May with the Assembly and say, okay, here's how we think we can fund that $200,000 to make some small improvements, or $200,000 plus $400,000 to $500,000 to do some of those extra pieces that we want to try and do.
All right. I do want to compliment you all on the addition of the extra express bus out between the university and downtown. It's every half hour now. It's wonderful.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Love that. Thank you. Well, we're just about getting there. Anything else you'd like to talk about today, Kim?
No, I think we've covered a lot.
Yeah, we have.
In a short period of time.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming down here. And it sounds like if you missed anything or if you want to find out more, as a listener, you can go to juno.org.
You can. Thank you very much, Scott.
You're welcome.
All my roads lead to you. All my plans. And though this won't be journey's end, somewhere there has to be a place that knows my name. Living and existing are
right, and welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I have been joined here in the studio at KTOO with Harborview Elementary School librarian Julie Leary. Welcome, Julie. And also Cherry Eklund. Thank you for coming down, you two.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, and we're here to talk about the Read Across America event, right?
That's correct.
All right, Julie, can you give us a little synopsis about what it's about?
Sure. The Read Across America this year will be on March 1st, this Saturday, coming up at Santa Kini Middle School at from 10 to noon.
Okay.
And we're going to be celebrating reading. NEA, about 17 years ago, decided that that would be a good thing to celebrate, to help motivate children and actually parents, too, to read to their kids. And so this is... we've been doing this for quite a few years, and I hope everybody can come out. There'll be a lot of activities, free books for kids.
That's great. And Cherry, what do you do for the district, and how are you involved with this event?
Well, I am an instructional coach at Harborview, but I'm also a member of JEA, and so there's a group of JEA teachers working to coordinate. This is an organization district-wide. We're working on this collaboratively.
Juno Education Association?
Association, yes.
All right. Sounds good. So you're working together. What's the event itself going to look like? It's 10 to noon at DZ on March 1st. What you said, some events, some readings?
Well, there'll be some activities, face mm-hmm. painting and some crafts. There'll be the Gastineau Strummers will be there from Gastineau for some music.
All right.
There'll be Reader's Theater from Barb Mayer's drama class from the high school, and some of her kids are coming to do some really fun Reader's Theater. There will be some basketball players, some celebrity basketball players to read to kids.
Cool.
And perhaps some other people from the community, maybe some Coast Guard or firefighters, often come to read to children. And that's about it. Oh, and it's a birthday, so there will be cake.
All right.
And the Juno Haines Reading Council supplies that. So it's another partnership that we work with them.
Great. An event to celebrate reading. We can all get behind that for sure. Are you set? Do you need any more volunteers? Everything look like it's a go?
I think we're pretty good now. I think we just need the kids to come.
All right.
So come on down on Saturday, and it should be fun.
And what's your target audience age-wise?
Well, we have anywhere from preschool babies all the way up to... middle school, I suppose. Anybody who likes to celebrate reading or who would love to celebrate and who would like to come and get a free book,
mm-hmm.
have a piece of cake.
Our goal is that every child walks away with a book in their hand and the joy of reading in
yeah.
their heart.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great event. That's March 1st. DZ, what day is that? March
Saturday.
Saturday, this Saturday at DZ from 10 to noon. Julie Leary, Cherry Eklund, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, you too. Oh, right there's some Steve Riley and the Mamou Playboys. Their song, Adroin Medley. We'll be talking about Cajun music later in the show today. But right now, in the studio with me are Mr. Joel Bennett and KJ Metcalf of Friends of Admiralty Island. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, Scott, thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
All right, and maybe we'll talk about the details of the annual meeting and the reading coming up, but KJ, would you start by telling us a little bit about what Friends of Admiralty Island's all about?
Right. We're a nonprofit organization. We got started in 1997, and we have about 350 members. And the purpose of our organization is really to promote the values of Admiralty Island. Was made a national monument, and then on top of that, a national wilderness area. So it's really an incredibly special, valuable place. And John Shane, one of the premier biologists of Alaska, said that in his estimation, it's one of the most valuable places on the earth because it's the last largest remaining segment of old growth, temperate old growth rainforest. So he said you can do research and you have the whole ecosystem essentially intact. So those are the values that we want to promote, the scientific, educational, and preservation values. And of course Angoon is a crucial part of that whole mix, and so the culture and the well-being of Angoon is of paramount importance.
All right. And Joel, you're also a member of Friends of Admiralty Island.
That's correct. I've been a member and an officer and a board member for some time now, and involved in through the years in many of the issues that have faced Admiralty. So, it's dear to my heart.
Yeah. What drew you in the first place? There's lots of organizations we can be a part of in Juneau. What was it about this one that drew you?
Well, I think my early conservation efforts when I moved to Juneau in 1968 were directed toward Admiralty, and my whole career in filmmaking began there with the first film about the island that was actually used in some of the congressional debates before it was proclaimed a national monument by President Carter. And through the years, I've done a lot of film work there, besides that first film, and I've been involved when I was on the Alaska State Game Board and in helping to regulation of hunting, bear hunting in particular, and had a keen interest in maintaining the conservative hunting regimen on Admiralty. So those are some of the things, but also recreational use. I've traveled from one end of the island to the other. I have a cabin on the north end. Done lots of deer hunting, and gotten to familiar with Angoon and many of the residents there through the years. So it's been a great blend of activities, and culminating in helping through this organization.
All right. So coming up on Saturday, you all have your annual meeting. KJ, do you want to tell us a little bit about this and what's going to be happening?
Sure. It's we'll be at the Yacht Club, and it's next Saturday. It starts at 4 o'clock with a talk by Hank Linfer, and Hank is well-known. He's from Gustavus, but he is an incredible speaker, and he's written The Faith of Cranes, which is, that's probably his first book, but it's an award-winning book, and it's just an amazing book. It's very popular, certainly in Alaska, but outside also. But he's going to talk about wilderness, and he's been doing a lot of work on the sounds of the outdoors. He's been working with Richard Nelson, who does a lot of radio specials. And so he and Richard have been working on sounds in Glacier Bay. And so he plans to share some of those and talk philosophy of wildlands and kind of where we are in this this effort of trying to save the earth.
All right. That sounds interesting. And this is going to be from 4 to 5 at the Yacht Club.
Right, and then we've got a potluck 6 to 7,
okay.
And just incredible food.
All right.
And then we have a film that's being presented by the Adam Andis of Sitka Conservation Society. It's a new film that's just been produced on the meaning of wild, which is really about wilderness areas on the Tongass.
Mm.
And people who have seen parts of it said it's incredibly beautiful. And so it's going to be a full evening. Also, there's a quiet auction, and I'll let Joel talk about that.
Yeah, we're excited about that because it's going to be, you know, a diverse offering of paintings and dinners, food items, adventure trips, some flight seeing trips, and, you know, I think people will be excited to see the quality of what's going to be offered and, you know, the value that they'll get for participating. So we're hoping to generate, you know, needed money for the organization and have people feel like they're contributing that way as well. So, you know, that's going to be kind of an integral and new item that we haven't done before at other meetings.
All right.
And I might also add that the last couple of years we've done a cruise to some part of Admiralty, and this year we're going to Angoon. And so it's a day-long cruise down and back, and I think it's going to be incredibly informational, but it's right at the end of May, May 31st, and it'll be on an Allen Marine catamaran. And we'll have some folks from Angoon who will be on board. And because there's no place to land in Angoon for the Allen Marine boat, we can land at Whaler's Cove, which is across from the ferry terminal, and Killisnoo Island. And Killisnoo was one of the areas where the Aleuts were placed during the war.
Mm.
And it was not a very bright or happy, very humane kind of thing that we did to those folks, and a number of them died. But one of the things that made it successful for them was that the folks of Angoon came over and supplied them with food and clothing and equipment so that they could survive. And so one of the things that we want to do is, this last year we went to Funder Bay at the internment camp there. So the two spots were Funder Bay and Killisnoo. And we'd like to place a plaque to commemorate the internment and the loss of lives and the courage of the people who were there. Not only that, but folks from Angoon will talk about the bombardment of Angoon. They'll talk about their subsistence and their hopes for tourism and economic development for their community.
All right, and when is that trip going to be, KJ?
That'll be May 31st, and the tickets will go on sale in 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
So folks ought to look for that, because only 100 tickets, and they'll go fast.
All right. But in the meantime, this Saturday, 4 to 5, a talk by Hank Lentfer, also a film, a potluck. Anyone who's interested in the nature of Southeast Alaska,
right.
Anyone who's interested in Admiralty Island, sounds like a great event. Is there anything you guys would like to add?
Well, only that Admiralty is indeed a very special place, and we hope that we can see that our grandchildren and their grandchildren can enjoy the things we have.
All right. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you, Scott.
And
thank you.
Here is Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 24th of February, 2014. Claudio Monteverdi's L'Orfeo received its premiere on this date, 1607, in Mantua, Italy, the first fully developed opera, story of Orpheus who descends into Hades to retrieve his dead wife, Eurydice. There had been plays with musical accompaniment, but this was the first in which all the actors sang, and people liked it. It's the birthday of Wilhelm Grimm, born in Hanau, Germany, 1786, who with his brother Jakob collected oral folk tales and published them in 1812, many of them very dark and violent, which, once the brothers Grimm realized children were reading their book, they began adapting the tales to make them softer and sweeter, including Snow White, Cinderella, Little Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, a great boon to the Walt Disney Corporation. It's the birthday of Jane Hirschfield, born New York City, 1953. She was in the first graduating class at Princeton to include women. Not long after, she published her first poem, and then went off to Northern California to study Buddhism for the next 8 years, during which time she did not write at all. She said, "I don't think poetry is based just on poetry. It is based on a thoroughly lived life. And so I couldn't just decide I was going to write. I first had to find out what it means to live." Her most recent book of poetry is Come Thief. It's the birthday of Stephen Jobs, born in San Francisco in 1955, to two graduate students who put him up for adoption. He was adopted by Clara and Paul Jobs, an accountant and a machinist, and growing up, Jobs and his father would tinker with electronics in the garage. Dropped out of college after a semester, became a Buddhist, and in 1976, at the age of 21, he co-founded Apple Computers, where less than 10 years later, he unveiled the Macintosh, the first personal computer to catch on with the public, on which you simply clicked on icons rather than typing in precise text commands. Stephen Jobs, who once said, "Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart." Here's a poem for today by Dennis O'Driscoll entitled Time Enough. The tally of years added up so rapidly, it appeared I had been shortchanged, tricked by sleight of hand, fallen victim to false bookkeeping. Yet, when I checked my records, each and every year had been accounted for, down to the last day, and could be audited against old diary entries, client briefings, dental checkups, parent-teacher meetings, wedding anniversaries, verified with credit card statements, multi-trip insurance, antibiotics, concert bookings, mobile top-ups, and although nagging doubts remained, an inkling that I had been ripped off in some way, given short shrift, made to live at an accelerated pace, rushed through my routines with unseemly haste. Nothing could be proved, no hard and fast statistics adduced. I had, it seems, unknown to me, been living my life to the full. Time Enough, a poem by Dennis O'Driscoll from his collection Dear Life, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right, we're back here in the studio on Juno afternoon, February 24th, 2014. And I've been joined here by Mr. Mark Choate and also Sun Choate. Welcome to the studio, you two.
Hi.
It's nice to have you. And you are the owners of the big house close to the mansion, the governor's mansion.
We are. We're the owners of the with Project in Progress.
All right. It's been a big one.
It is. It has been.
Mark, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the history of the place and then how it came into your life?
We believe the house was built around 1910. It was built by one of the Shattuck brothers. And there was one brother went into insurance and the other brother had a lumber mill, and the brother we know had the lumber mill.
Okay.
The two wives of the Shattucks lived across the street from each other there, and for 20 years, because one was Catholic, one was Protestant, they never talked to each other.
Oh, wow.
Interesting situation.
Mm-hmm.
They sold the house to the Monagles in the early 20s, and then the Monagle families gave it to their daughter, Rosellen, in 1944 as a wedding gift.
Okay.
She then lived there until she married Ole Lillegraven and lived there until we bought it in 1991.
Yeah.
When we bought it, she said, if I don't get my price, I'll just die. So we gave her a price. So we're really only the third owners of the house in more than 100 years.
What attracted you to it in the first place?
We love the location.
Yeah.
When we were living in about an 800-square-foot condo, less than that at the time. And
we all walk by the house. We wish that when my son go to the kindergarten, uh-huh. I wish we can have that house. And then we set the goal, and then we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great sun exposure, great view.
Yes.
Great yard. It had a great garden until it all got trampled with the construction.
Right.
But it's a neat place, and it was a neat house. It just had gotten so old and mm-hmm. the system so worn out that we put off the remodel for probably
many years.
And finally we're sort of forced to do it because of all the systems were failing in the house.
Sure. And you decided to do a renovation big time.
We did. We started out, I think, sort of with one idea, and for many reasons the house is way over budget, more than twice what we planned, and we're still going and way over the due date to finish it. So we finally decided, well, let's not look at this as a 20 or 30 year house, but as a 500 year house. And so when you have a 500 year perspective, it's much easier to sort of say, well, how will this sink work for the next 150 years? Or those floors, you know, how many times can we resand these floors before they ever need to be replaced? And
mm-hmm.
so all the decision making has become more long term. And so we have, of course, the copper, which everyone sees. And copper is every bit of copper ever made in the world has been recycled. It's 100% recyclable. It heals itself. It's an antibacterial. It's an amazing product. And that roof has been put on by a master European copper master. And, you know, you can see the work that goes into it. It's pretty amazing.
So you're after sustainability here, it
yes.
sounds like. I've never heard of that, a 500-year plan on a house.
Well, we're going to hopefully, if we ever have any money again, fund a trust so our children can't sell it. They can live there, and their grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, but it'll keep going. Hopefully it'll be a place the community, you know, can be available. We intend to have lots of fundraisers and fun events there. We love parties.
Great.
It's going to have a lot of space, Everything is taking a lot longer than we thought. This could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I heard somebody say something about house concerts.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. The Linda Rosenthal's and Paul have already been over, and they're planning out their spaces.
Have you increased the square footage with this renovation?
We did. The old house was about 4,000 square feet, and part of that was sort of an unfinished basement.
Mm.
And we really dug out underneath the basement, and then we added the back wing there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's now about 7,000 square feet.
Wow.
So there's actually a lot of space. But in the basement, there's a big gym, and there's an art studio and a small gallery for her, and a double car garage with electric recharging stations, you know, the high-speed electric recharge.
Right.
We don't have an electric car. We can't afford it now. But ultimately, we'll get one again. We'll get one. And then nice bedrooms and lots of space, good space.
Plus the generators.
We have a generator in there that can power that part of Juneau if we need to. There's a power outage.
All right. What's been the biggest challenge with this whole process for you?
We didn't really know anything about it when we got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been a lot of learning. And so learning to be patient and learning to realize, I think, also people's limits when you're working with people. And as we've gone through it, you know, some people were good for one thing but not so good for others. And so we've sort of evolved. But we feel like overall the process has allowed us to really understand it and son has knows every square inch of that house, and there are beautiful arches and doorways, and every room is unique. Every room has a nice feeling. There's tons of light. The floors will all be a French limestone or French white oak, and so they'll be very light colored and feel very like they've been there a long, long time.
You guys are going to have something like the governor's cookies at, you know, at the holidays, like an open house, so we can come see it.
I think we may do that. Depending on who the governor is, we may compete, you know.
Well, fascinating. I wish we had more time. I'd love to learn more about it. The architects, I understand there's some a French guild involved with a spiral staircase.
Yes.
But maybe we'll have to do chapter two in a couple months, or maybe when it's done, we'll bring you back.
Well, maybe you guys can come up when they do have that. They're going to put the staircase in this summer. And they actually have French Compagnons who are working on this down in Seattle right now, and they're building it, and they're going to ship it up in pieces and put it into the tower. And so it's like a huge piece of furniture.
Wow.
Pretty cool. And from the 14, 1500s.
Well, good for you, too, for building something beautiful and sustainable, and good luck with the remainder of the process, and I'm sure we'll check in soon.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tell you what I would do.
Tim O'Brien, Charles Sawtell and Company right there with Working on a Building. I've just been joined here in the studio by folks from JDHS to talk to us about the Southeast Alaska Science Fair. Jonathan Smith, Anouk Otsi, and Helen Thurston. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Did I get everyone's name right?
Yeah.
All right. So the Southeast Alaska Science Fair, when is it?
It is this Friday and Saturday. Friday night, the public can come in. It's open house from 3:45 all the way till 8:30. Great time to come in and wander around and see the projects. And then on Saturday, there's an open house from noon to 1:30 for the public. The students will be judged on Saturday morning, but the public open house is from noon to 1:30.
All right, so Friday, 3:45 to 8:30.
Yep.
Okay, and then Saturday from noon to 1:30.
Noon to 1:30. If people want to see the students, know that the students are going to be at their projects and all dressed up and whatnot, Saturday's the day for you. But if you want time to really see the projects and be able to delve into them, Friday night's the good time.
All right. And Anouk, how are you involved with the science fair?
I'm doing a project, and I'll be presenting. My project is on migration, chum salmon migration timing through Icy Strait.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Very apropos to life here in Southeast Alaska. Yeah. A future biology major, perhaps?
Maybe.
All right. And Helen, what's your project about?
We were testing how water quality affects the mortality rate of a specific species of bugs called stoneflies that are the food for what where we were testing them, it was food for sockeye salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need the sockeyes, so we have the bears.
And stoneflies start out as aquatic insects, right?
Yes.
In the water, so spend most of their life there even, right?
Yep.
Wow. That's also another very cool project. All right, so that's Friday night, again, where you can go and see and read about these projects. Maybe the students will be there, maybe not.
Yeah, most of the students will be there. They'll be practicing. This is in the Murray Drake Gym next to JDHS. There's some 150 projects from all over Southeast Alaska, mostly from JDHS and Thunder Mountain, but there are other schools involved too, Petersburg and Skagway. Yeah.
And I suspect you'll have members from the scientific community as judges?
Yeah,
teachers.
You'll see judges there on Friday night being trained. You'll also see them walking around and looking at the projects. We tap into the community. We have over 170 official judges that will be looking at the projects. And then we have another 25 special awards judges, community members, businesses from town that have decided that they want to throw their money and support behind the students.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great time. So that's this Friday, 3:45 to 8:30, and then also on Saturday, noon to 1:30. I wish we had more time. I want to talk about your whole scientific process, things you've figured out, but unfortunately we don't.
You're just going to have to come to the fair.
Exactly.
You're just going to have to come to the fair. There's good stuff. I want to remind everybody there's all sorts of topics. Please come down.
Great. Thank you three for coming in today and sharing with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon, a big day here. Lots of guests and Last but not least today is Mr. Sergey Morrison of the North Country Cajun Club.
Hey there, everyone.
Thanks for coming down to the studio today, Sergey. You're going to be playing this Wednesday night at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater as part of the KRNN Spotlight Series.
That we are.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the band and what kind of music you guys like to play.
Well, we have a five, sometimes six-piece, sometimes five-piece band. In this case, there's going to be five of us playing. And we play Cajun music, which is from Southwest Louisiana. And then we also mix in some country music. There's a bit of a crossover there between East Texas and Southwest Louisiana. And so there's a lot of old kind of source material. And then we've kind of just, I don't know, if you listen closely to it, there's just a lot of similarities. And, well, the country stuff is in English, and that's easier to sing than the Cajun stuff. But anyways, we play a little bit of both, and that's what we'll be playing. It's fiddle, accordion, guitar, bass, and triangle. And if we play out at a bar or a bigger event, we'll have drummer too. But no drummer in the Goldtown. I thought that might be a little much. So,
You having fun doing it?
Yeah, it's fun. It's a learning process. I mean, it's brand new music for all of us. Well, at least as far as learning it in the last few years. So we've been getting together for probably 3 years now, and finally had enough material to start playing some gigs this fall. And which is really the best kind of practice is playing gigs.
Absolutely. And another thing I like about what you do in particular, and I know other members of the band, is you travel down to the source. You go to festivals and you eat Cajun food and play Cajun music.
That's true, yeah. It's pretty inspiring going down there. I just kind of fall in love with it and have never gone back since, so.
Well, great. Everybody, this concert is this Wednesday at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. Doors open at 6:30 and the show starts at 7. Tickets are going fast. They're on the website right now. You can go to ktoo.org to get tickets. They're less expensive if you buy them in advance, or you can buy them at the door on Wednesday. Sergey, thank you so much for coming down to the studio today.
No problem.
All right. We'll see you on Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Joan Partis will be your host tomorrow. Same place, same time, KRNN KTOO 104.3 here in the capital city. Here's All Things Considered.
We did it, and it was a dream come true.
Those stories in this hour of All Things Considered after the news.